Since after inflicting such blows. How many trials you know like that? Let's torture this person. Let's completely disform him and then declare him innocent. It'd never happen, would it? At least we wouldn't think it did. It did happen. So sad. So sad when you think about it. But that's what he did. In the hopes, I believe, to get Jesus released. He didn't want to have to put him to death. Surely, them seeing him like this will change their minds. I mean, just again, look, 18 verse 38. What does he say there at the end of verse 38? I find no fault in him at all. No fault. 19 verse 4, Pilate says, Behold, I'm bringing him out to you that you may know I find no fault in him. Notice again in verse 6, there as they shout, Crucify him, crucify him. He says, You take him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him. He's innocent. He's innocent. So what is Pilate doing? I mean, he's a sharp guy. I mean, they wouldn't be in this position if he wasn't. He had a sense of justice. He could choose to do the right thing, or he could choose to do the obvious wrong thing. And he felt that the mutilated Jesus would cause the people to say, Enough, enough, enough. But that wasn't all that took place, was the scourging. They mock him. They twist a crown of thorns and put it on his head. The soldiers play a game with Jesus, punching him and twist this crown of thorns. They say that these thorns in this part of the world would have thorns about at least an inch in length. An inch in length. And so you can imagine as they would twist that upon the brow, it would cut into the skin. And as they would punch him and beat him, it would further drive those thorns into the skull. And they'd spit all over him. They made a character of Jesus as if he was some kind of king, they said. The reality was that he was a king, just not of this world. He was king of the universe. Have you ever thought about how expansive the universe is? If you watch some kind of documentary about just the expanse of the universe, it will literally make your head spin to know how big it is and how small we are, and he was king of it all. No fault. But he can't be rid of Jesus. And so here Jesus stands, if he's able to stand at all at this point. Body tinted with red by blood, well beyond bruising that he had from the previous study. And they shout very clearly. Verse 6, when they saw him, Crucify him! Crucify him! What we see, dear friends, is Jesus was guilty, though proven innocent. And we also see an unholy hatred as well. This is hatred, pure and simple. It has taken their minds away. Think about it. We sometimes fail to see ourselves in the story. And like I mentioned last week, that's one of the things that pricks my heart so, is when I see myself and I ask myself, whose side would I be on? And then I begin to ask myself, what characteristics have I manifested in my life? Have I had such kind of unholy hatred of my life? A hatred of one so passionate that I wish they were gone, I wish they were dead? I know I have. And it was a cancer they ate upon my soul until I repented of it and let it go. You have scary thoughts. Let them die. Let them get an accident. Let them have some kind of illness. I'm ashamed to say. And here their thought was, let them crucify him. We see him like that, and that's not enough. Let him be crucified. And you see to it, Pilate. You do this deed for us. You see, they reached such an insanity of hatred that they were impervious to reason and to mercy and just to the claims of common humanity. Once a man allows himself to hate, he can neither think straight nor see straight nor listen without distortion. And that's why hatred's a terrible thing. It takes man's senses away. And that's what I mean when I say, when I preach to myself. I don't see myself here often in the story with Christ, suffering with Him, but rather reflect on a life that has too much history with the wrong side, even if just in principle. Verse 7, the Jews answered him, "We have a law, and according to our law, he ought to die." He ought to die. Now here's why we hate him. Because he made himself the Son of God. Now, verse 8. When Pilate heard this saying, he was the more afraid. That sent shivers down his spine. Now think about Pilate. If one studies a little bit of the history, they would have some greater context to the story, some more framework to the painting, we might say. See, Pilate knew the Jews would not tolerate any false gods. I mean, that was commandment number one of the Ten Commandments. And two times, history reveals that Pilate had attempted such to bring in and introduce false gods to the Jews, and both times he had revolts. One time they put a figurine on the shields to be used by the officers. And the revolt was so intense that Tiberius Caesar, commanded Pilate to remove those shields. And so he was kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. He was kind of gaining a shaky reputation among his superiors. And the Jews, he kind of had to try and keep them at bay. And so for them to make this claim, he makes himself to be the Son of God. Well, this cuts both ways. Because this, he knows, is where he's blown up before. So what does he do? There's another part of it, and that was that Pilate was actually afraid about that answer. What if it was true? I mean, there's no one that's been like this before him in trial before. Nor would there ever be one like this again. What if it were true? You know, their pagan beliefs thought that the sons of God would actually come down in the earth and mingle among men. You remember Acts chapter 14, there verse 12, where some of them started proclaiming, you know, Paul and Silas as Zeus and another god as well. And so they were their offspring, and they thought that this superstitious thought that, you know, that could be the case. And so he was afraid that he might offend in that kind of a way. So verse 9, he went into the praetorium again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" This has got him. And all of it starts coming together now, if you think about it. Hold your place here. Matthew chapter 27. Matthew 27, verse 19. Matthew 27, there verse 19. While he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent to him saying, "Have nothing to do with this just man. For I have suffered many things today in a dream because of him." You know, Pilate was many things. And he was actually known for being a man who listened to his wife. Now, most things that Pilate were, we never want to be. But in that case, he's an example to us all. And these words of his wife, no doubt, would have sunk deep into his soul. And he asked Jesus, where are you from? This is tormenting him now. Jesus is the one on trial, but it almost seems more like Pilate is the one that's being tormented. Now when he asked this question, he wasn't expecting Jesus to give some physical address, 101 Jerusalem Drive. Where are you from? Are you from the stars? Are you from the gods? Essentially. And you can almost hear a tremble in the voice, a mingling of wonder and fear. And to that, Jesus, it says in verse 9, gave him no answer. He was silent, just as Isaiah said he would be. So Pilate, in a frenzy, and no doubt some frustration, says in verse 10, are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have power to crucify you and power to release you? Then why don't you do it, Pilate? I mean, we all want to know very badly, why don't you just release him? You've already declared him innocent at least 3 or 4 times to this point. Well, the reason why is because Pilate, he knows that the choice before him is a choice between his soul and his neck. Now, Pilate, like many others, the soul has always kind of been a gray area. But you know, there's nothing gray about the neck. Nothing gray about that at all. And he, like many others, will fail the ultimate test. Verse 11, here Jesus says in response to what he said about his power. Jesus answered, he says, you could have no power at all against me, unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin. And so here he recognizes that it is God that has the ultimate authority, and Pilate was just simply being allowed. But ultimately, the Jews had the greatest blame in this. And that's what he's saying here. By the one who delivered me to you as the greatest sin. Jesus was sent to the lost house of Israel. He wasn't sent to the Gentiles. He wasn't sent to the Romans. He certainly wasn't sent to Pilate. When you read about his limited commission, there he tells them, go to no one except the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Jesus had a short amount of time on earth. He needed to maximize that time by spending it among those that knew the Old Testament scriptures, that they might best recognize who he was. The rest of the world didn't have such scriptures and wouldn't readily recognize him. That would be a mission to be tackled by the apostles and the church to come. The Jews, who should have known me above all, have delivered me to you. And they have the greatest sin. Verse 12, listen to this. You thought Pilate was afraid. Look at him now. From then on, Pilate sought to release him. He was in this perpetual pickle he could just not get out of. He was more scared now than ever. I've got to release this guy. I've got to figure out some way to make it happen. I've got to think of some way, some kind of caveat, some kind of out. And the Jews knew it. They knew it. This trial was taking much longer. And so they pulled their trump card. Verse 12. If you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. Whomever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar. In other words, we'll report you. And Tiberius Caesar would never tolerate a traitor. They had him right where they wanted him. Verse 13, when Pilate therefore heard that saying. Listen, when he heard those words, when he heard that blackmail from the Jews, he brought Jesus out and sat down in the judgment seat, in a place that is called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. And so here he would bring him into the praetorium essentially again. The Jews would stand outside, and here's where he would deliver the judgment. We know what he would choose. He had a choice between his neck and his soul, and he chose his neck. He knew in condemning Jesus to death, listen, he knew he was condemning a completely innocent man. He knew it. There was no doubt in his mind about that. And he also perhaps had an inkling that perhaps this was more than just a man. But with this statement, he would bring him in for a final word of judgment. And now we come to that verdict. Verse 14, now it was the preparation day of the Passover, about the sixth hour. And he said to the Jews, behold, your king. Now, sometimes you read over verse 14 and you don't get the connection that John was trying to make. But let me just spell it out to you. He said, this was preparation day. This was preparation. What do you mean preparation day of a Passover? This was the time when thousands and thousands of lambs were being made ready and were being even slaughtered at this very time. Lambs were dying right and left. And remember, that was significant, and this time period was significant to the Jew because it was the time which God would pass over the Hebrews that were in Egypt and spare them from death. About that time, there was another lamb being prepared for death, and which would give the ability for God to also pass over the death sentence for all mankind, for any who would come to Him. And so John puts that in there, that the reader might understand what is taking place currently, even as Jesus being tried, and the verdict is being passed. And verse 15, they cried out, away with Him! Away with Him! Crucify Him! And Pilate said to them, shall I crucify your king? The chief priests answered, we have no king but Caesar. No king but Caesar. Oh, they speak rightly. They speak rightly because God was certainly not their king. They never really liked it when God was their king. That's why in the Old Testament they even asked, give us a king. And here, God put on flesh and came among men, and they didn't like it then either. They said, Caesar is our king. Now that statement there really had to shock Pilate more than anything when you think about it. Maybe even taking his breath away. Everyone knew. Listen, everyone knew that the Jews hated Caesar. They hated Roman control and occupancy over Palestine. They hated that. And so when Pilate heard that, he must have had a look that was half bewilderment and half kind of poetic justice amusement. For it was crystal clear that the Jews were prepared to abandon every principle that they had in order to eliminate Jesus Christ. You see, again, in their sense and their hatred, they forgot all sense of judgment, all sense of justice. They forgot all their principles, and yes, they even forgot God. They refused to defile themselves, though, ceremonially, but felt free to do it morally. You know, let's hold our place in the story and turn to Matthew 23. This was something that Jesus shared with them pointedly. He rebuked them sharply in Matthew chapter 23, and we just don't have time to look at all the rebukes. But there in Matthew 23, verse 23, he says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, Hypocrites! For you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of law, such as justice and mercy and faith. And was that not evident there in the trial of Jesus at the cross? Justice and mercy and certainly faith. He says, these you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. You know, what he said was ultimately, he wasn't putting down their attention to detail and minor elements of the law. And neither should we. That's important to God. The details matter to God. They always matter to God. And that's what he says here. That they should do those things. But don't forget the weightier matters as well. You should have done them both. You need to do them both, he said. And so do we. We need to do them both. So back to our story there in 19, verse 16. There's no stopping it now. He will be crucified. Verse 16, it says, then he delivered him to them to be crucified. And so they took Jesus and led him away. One of our favorite songs says, upon his precious head, they placed a crown of thorns. They laughed and said, behold, the King. They struck him and they cursed him and mocked his holy name. All alone, he suffered everything. Now, we know he could have stopped it if he desired. He could have called 10,000 angels to destroy the world and set him free. He could have called 10,000 angels. But he died alone. For you. And for me. You know, what we have seen today was a part of our redemption as well. Though he's not been crucified at this point in our story. And that's why I started off with Isaiah 53. By His stripes we are healed. His affliction, though He was beaten, that's all that Isaiah said. All of that was paying the penalty for our sin, not His. He knew no sin. And so all of this that we've seen even tonight is a part of our redemption. And we see the absolute horror of the reality of sin. But as we close now, we see he's being led away somewhere else to suffer an even greater torment than what we've seen tonight. And we'll look at it next week. Isn't that something? We again close with him being led away. Every time we close, he's always being led away. Pushed away. What do you do? What will you do with Jesus? Do you lead him away or do you push him away? Or do you receive him, I should say? How many invitations have you heard only to push him away again? You know, one day you will run out of invitations and then he'll stand at the judgment seat and judge you. Now, God is a God of chances, but one day those chances run out. How many chances did Pilate have? He first tried to refuse to deal with the case, didn't he? And he tried to release him by freeing a criminal to, you know, you want Barabbas or Jesus? Surely they'll take Jesus. Then he had him scourged in the hope that that would get him released. And still he made one more attempt saying, I don't find any guilt in this man. He sought to release him more and more. Over and over. He tried to evade the responsibility of dealing with Jesus. But that is precisely the one thing that no one can do. That's why he was in such a frenzy in such a mess. He didn't want to deal with Jesus. But that's exactly what all men must do. So will you push him away? Will you lead him away tonight? Or will you receive him and obey him and serve him? That's what he wants. That's why he did this. As the song says, he died alone for you and for me. So how do you receive him? We're told by many today that you just say a prayer. They call it a sinner's prayer. And yet you don't find that in Scripture. That's what Satan would have you to believe, to think, to receive Jesus. And if one does it, they fall short. They don't receive him. I suggest for you to believe the words of Jesus. Jesus said to his apostles after he rises from the dead, "He who believes and is baptized shall be saved." And I would suggest for you to follow the order of Jesus. Too many today say that you believe, you're saved, and then you can later on be baptized. Is that what Jesus said? No. There are some today that will teach you can be baptized as an infant, be saved at that point, and later on go to believe. Is that what Jesus said? No. What did Jesus say? He who believes and then is baptized, because it's a baptism for the forgiveness of sins, then they shall be saved. And that's how he receives you, and you can receive him. And we beg you that if you've not done that tonight, to do so and delay no longer. Won't you come while together we stand and while we sing? Sweetly rings over land and sea.